Osho, My Way, The Way of the White Clouds, Discourse Number 10, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
As you know, the old Zen custom was that a monk should stay with his master for 10 years before he went out on his own teaching. There is a Zen story about a monk who had completed his 10 years and one rainy day decided to visit Nanin, the Zen master. When Nanin had given his greeting, he said to the monk, "No doubt you came with an umbrella. Do you remember on which side you left your shoes?" And for a moment the monk hesitated and realized that he was not in every minute then. You've told us that life has a pulsation in and out and yin and yang. Does this mean that we must try for every minute awareness, or can we too pulsate with life and at times let go our trying?
The first thing to be understood, awareness should be moment to moment, but it can be only when it has become effortless. With effort, you will lose contact again and again. With effort, you will have to rest. Effort cannot be continuous. It is impossible. How can you make an effort continuously? You will get tired. And then you will have to relax. Every effort needs relaxation. So if awareness is through effort, then awareness cannot be a constant, continuous flow. There will be moments when you will have to lose awareness. Those will be the moments of relaxation from the effort. Life pulsates. Life always moves to the opposite. Effort, then you have to rest. Again you make the effort, then you have to rest. But there is an awareness which goes beyond life, the transcendental. Then there is no pulsation. But it is effortless. It is spontaneous. What happened to this monk, this disciple of Nanin? The master asked, "Where you have left your shoes, on the right or on the left?" And he hesitated. And he realized that in the moment of leaving the shoes, he was not aware, otherwise he must know. Where he has left, on the left or on the right? His consciousness is not yet continuous. That shows only that his consciousness is yet not effortless. He has still to remember. Consciously make effort. His mindfulness is yet with a tension. He has not become mindful. So sometimes he succeeds, sometimes he fails. Nanin is asking only, that is your awareness now natural? You need not manipulate it. You need not do anything about it. It is there. Whatsoever you do, it is there. All you have to make effort for it to be there. If the effort is there, it is a strange thing. And a strange thing is bound to be unnatural. And the unnatural awareness is not really awareness. It exists only on the periphery, not in you. If it exists in you, there is no need to make any effort. What I am trying to say is, effort is always on the periphery. You cannot touch the center through effort. You can do something on the periphery. You can change your behavior. You can change your so-called character on the periphery with effort. You can become a good man from being bad. You can become virtuous from being a sinner. You can become even a saint on the periphery with effort. But the center can never be touched and penetrated through effort. Because no action can lead to you. You are already there. There is no need to do anything. You have to be simply silent, spontaneous. And then the center arises. It comes out of the clouds. There is a break, a gap. You suddenly realize your spontaneous awareness. You are awareness. It is nothing you do. It is nothing which has to be done. Your very nature is awareness. Hindus have called you Satchidananda. They have used three words, Sat, Chit, Anand. Sat means the existential. That which can never go into non-existence. Sat means the true, which can never become untrue. Sat means the eternal, which was, which is, which will be. Chit means awareness, consciousness. That is your nature. You have always been conscious. You are conscious. You will be conscious. That consciousness cannot be taken from you. But it exists at your very core of being, not on the periphery. It is you, but you are not in contact with yourself. And Ananda means bliss, ecstasy. It is not that you have to achieve bliss. It is you. You have always been blissful. You cannot be otherwise. There is no possibility. You cannot change it. But you will say, this seems absolutely absurd because we are in misery. You are in misery because you have become too much obsessed with the periphery. You have forgotten completely the center. You have become too much engaged with others, too much occupied with others, that the whole attention is focused on the other and you have fallen into the set, into the darkness. Satchidananda you are. Zen master Nanin is asking the disciple, have you now become alert? who you are. Are you now rooted in your nature? If the disciple was really rooted in his nature, what would have been the case? The story is very difficult to understand. It is not a question of leaving the shoes on the left or on the right. That is not the point in this story. That seems to be the point. That is not the point. The real point is, when Nanin asked this, the disciple hesitated. That is the real point. And in that moment of hesitation, he was not aware that he is hesitating. If he was aware that there is hesitation, he would have been accepted. At that very moment, he lost awareness. And you cannot deceive Nanin. If you go to see Nanin, you can remember this very well, where you have left your shoes. That is not difficult. And Nanin will ask you where, on the left or the right, you have left your shoes. And you can immediately answer on the right. And still you will lose. That is not the point. That is just a deception. Nanin is diverting the mind. Just look in him right now what is happening. In the very moment when Nanin asked, where are your shoes, on the right or on the left, the disciple missed. In that very moment he hesitated. And he was not aware of the hesitation. He started thinking. In that very moment he became unaware. Nanin looked into him. That question was just to divert the mind. It was just a deception. And the disciple failed. He cannot be sent to teach others. He is not yet ready. He is not yet aware. And one who is not aware, how he can teach others? And whatsoever he is going to teach will be false. There are many teachers who can teach and still they are not aware of their own selves. There can be even good teachers. Efficient, artful, but that's not the point. They cannot be of any help. I was traveling in a train once. One small boy was making much nuisance. All the passengers in that car were troubled. He was running from this corner to that, toppling glasses, falling on people, and the father was very much embarrassed. He tried many times to stop the boy, but he won't listen. Then finally the father said, "Willie, if you don't listen to me, and if you don't stop, I am going to spank you." The boy still continued running. He went to the other end and he said, "Okay, you spank me, but then I am going to tell the ticket collector how old really I am." this father cannot be a teacher. And even a child is not going to listen to him. A teacher who is unaware of his own self cannot be a teacher. He cannot teach others the thing that he has not himself attained. And awareness is something like an infectious disease. When a master is alert, aware, you become infectious with his awareness. Sometimes, just sitting by the side of the master, you suddenly become aware, as if the clouds have gone and you can see the open sky. Even for a moment. But that becomes a deep change in the very quality of your being. Even not making any effort on your part, just being near a master who is a pool of silent awareness, suddenly you become silent. He touches you. The closed doors open, or as if in a dark night, suddenly there is lightning, and you see the whole. It disappears because it cannot be retained by you if it is not attained by you. You will lose it, but you will never be the same again. You have known something, something that was previously unknown. And now this knowing will remain a part of you. And there will arise a desire. There will arise a new ambition to attain this, to make this permanent. Because even for a moment it was so blissful. With it soured so much happiness on you, so much joy. But if the master, if the teacher is not himself aware, he can teach about awareness, he cannot teach awareness. And teaching about awareness is useless. It is verbal. It is a theory. You can learn the theory from him, but you cannot learn the fact. Hence, before this disciple leaves Nanin, Nanin must look into him. And this is a very different phenomenon. In the world of education, a disciple is examined, but always his memory is examined. Never he. Always his memory is examined, never he. Nanin is not examining the memory of the disciple. He is not asking where you have left your shoes, on the right or on the left. He is not asking for a perfect memory. Because where he left the shoes is now past. He is trying to see into the being of the disciple right now. He is not examining the memory, but trying to look in the consciousness. This very moment. Past is not the question. The presentness is the question. Just imagine that disciple sitting before Nanin. none in us, and the disciple is lost into the past. He tries to think where he has left. He tries to think whether I have been able to remember or not. He tries to think whether I have missed awareness or not. Right now he has become a confusion. His whole consciousness has become cloudy. He is no more here. He is not in the presence of Nani. He has gone into the past. He has gone into thinking. He is not meditative. The hesitation, the thinking, the effort to try. You cannot escape Nani. He will see through you. He will see all the clouds. He will see you are not here and now. Then you cannot be allowed to teach. Then you cannot be sent. Because what you will teach, that which you have not got, you cannot teach. You can pretend, and that pretension will be dangerous. Because if you pretend that you are aware and you are not, that pretension will become infectious. And a pseudo master creates pseudo disciples. And then like ripples, that pseudoness goes on spreading. The most dangerous sin that a man can commit is to pretend awareness. Even if you murder a man, it is not such a great sin. Because really you cannot murder. Only you can destroy the body and the soul moves into another. You only destroy one game, another starts immediately. A murderer is not such a great sinner. But if you pretend that you are aware and you are not, if you pretend that you are a master and you are not, you are doing such harm, such infinite harm, that no sin can be compared to it. Because others will get the pretension. They will start pretending. And then it will go on and on. Just like you throw a stone into a silent lake, and then ripples arise and they go on and on. And one ripple creates another, pushes another. And then it goes on and on to the very boundaries of the lake. And this lake of consciousness has no boundaries. Once a ripple is created, it will go forever, forever. It will continue. You will not be here, but your pretensions, your falsity will continue. And many will be deluded by it. A false master is the greatest sinner in this world. That's why Nanin won't allow anybody to go and teach unless he has become enlightened himself. Then the very light that burns within you helps others to be enlightened. The very fire that burns within you makes others warm. The very life that has happened to you helps others to come out of their deadness. But remember, alertness, awareness, or consciousness can be continuous only when it has become effortless. In the beginning, effort is bound to be there, because otherwise, how you are going to start? You will make effort. You will try to be mindful. You will try in every way to be conscious. But the effort will create a tension. And the more you make the effort, the more tense you will be. There will be tiny glimpses. But because of the tension, the ecstasy will be missed. But you have to pass through this state also of making effort. One thing you will become aware sooner or later, that whenever you make effort, awareness comes to you, but it is a very tortured awareness, very nightmarish. It is very heavy. It sits just like a rock on your head. It is not joyful. It is not weightless. It is not dancing. But while making this effort, sometimes suddenly you will become aware when you were not making the effort. And that awareness will be light, joyful, dancing, ecstatic. But this will happen only to those who are making efforts. While making efforts, sometimes when you are not making efforts, this bliss will happen to you, and then you will become aware that through effort you cannot achieve that ultimate. Only through non-effort it happens. To many meditators around me it happens. They come to tell me that while meditating in the morning, in the evening, nothing much is happening. But suddenly in the night, or suddenly in the afternoon, they are sitting and something starts. And they were not doing anything. This will happen. This is just like many times you will remember. Someday you forget a name. And you feel it is just on the tip of the tongue. You become very much estranged. You make every effort to bring it to consciousness. It is not coming. The more you make the effort, the more you feel lost. And continuously you know that you know. Continuously you know that you remember. It is just near by the corner, but some barrier, something as a block, is there, and the name is not coming to you. It may be a name of a cherished friend. And then the whole effort becomes so futile, you leave it. You go and start reading the newspaper, or smoking, or you go in the garden for a walk, or you just start digging in the garden, and suddenly it pops up. Suddenly the name is there. The friend is standing there, the face is there. What happened? When you were making the effort, you were so tense, that very tenseness became the block. The very tenseness narrowed down the passage. The name wanted to come, the memory was knocking on the door, but the very tenseness became the closeness. That's why you were feeling it just on the tip of the tongue. It was. But because you were so tense, so much worried about it, so much anxious to bring it out, your anxiety became a lock. Because when the mind is very much anxious, it becomes closed. All that is beautiful and true happens only when you are not anxious about it. All that is lovely happens only when you were not even waiting for it. Not asking, not demanding. Then the mind has no blocks. That's why it happens when you have forgotten it. Effort is needed in the beginning. Effort is a must. Futile, but it's still a must. The futility will be realized by and by. When you have glimpses, sudden glimpses, and the feeling that you were not making any effort, and those glimpses have showered upon you gifts from the divine, then you can leave the effort. Then leaving the efforts, more and more gifts will be coming. In the East, we have always believed, and believed rightly, that enlightenment is nothing like an achievement. It is like a grace. It is a gift. It is prasad. God gives it to you. You cannot snatch it away from His hand. For a Western seeker, this is very difficult to realize. Because in the West, the last few centuries, the whole human mind has been converted into a snatching thing. You have snatched from nature everything. Whatsoever secret science knows are not given. They have been snatched. You have forced nature violently to open her doors of mysteries. And because you have succeeded with the matter, you think that the same can happen with the divine also. That cannot happen. That is impossible. You cannot attack heaven. And you cannot go there with the bayonets. You cannot force the divine to open its heart to you. Because whenever you are forcing, you are closed. That's the problem. Whenever you are forcing, you are closed. And if you are closed, the divine cannot be revealed to you. When you are not forcing and floating like a white cloud, just roaming, not many making any effort to reach anywhere. When there is no goal, there is no effort. When you don't want to achieve anything, there is no straining for it. When you are happy as you are, when you are happy as the world is, when you accept things as they are, you don't want to change anything. Suddenly, you are transported into a different dimension of being. You realize the doors have always been open. They were never closed. They cannot be closed. The divine mystery has always been near you. It was never very far. It cannot be, because you are part of the divine. Wherever you go, the mystery moves with you. It is not a question of searching and seeking. It is a question of remaining silent and alive. When you seek, you miss. Because a seeker is always violent. When you search, it will not come to you. Because the mind that is searching is too much preoccupied. It is not available. It is never here and now. It is always somewhere in the future, when the discovery will be done, when the research will be completed, when the seeking will come to an end. It is always somewhere in the end. It is not here. And the divine is here. So you never meet. a seeker never reaches. That doesn't mean that don't be a seeker, you will have to be in the beginning. There is no other way. In the beginning you have to be a seeker, you will have to seek and make all the efforts. Just by making all the efforts and becoming a mad seeker, you will realize that it happens only when you are in a non-seeking mind. Sometimes resting, it will come to you. Sometimes sleeping, it will descend on you. Sometimes just walking on the road, it will be there. Sometimes just looking at the sun rising in the morning, not doing anything, just a passive awareness, just looking at the sun rising, or a moon simmering in a cold night in a lake, or just a flower opening its petals, and you are just a passive awareness, just looking because nothing is needed on your part. When a flower is opening, no help is needed from you. There are foolish people who will try to help. They will destroy the whole beauty of the flower, and that flower will never really open them. Even if you force it to open, it will be a closed flower. The flowering has not happened. It is a forced thing. Anything forced never flowers. You are not needed to help the sun to rise. There are people who think that their help is needed. There are people who create much mischief, because they think everywhere their help is needed. In real life, wherever reality is happening, nobody's help is needed. But it is very difficult to resist the temptation. Because when you help, you feel you are doing something. When you do something, you create the ego. When you don't do anything, the ego cannot exist. In a non-doing moment, the ego disappears. Looking at the sun rising, looking at the flowers opening, looking at the moon in a cold lake shivering, not doing anything, suddenly it will descend on you. You will find the whole existence is filled with the divine. Your every breath is divine. With effort, reach to effortlessness. With seeking, reach to a state of no seeking. With mind, arrive to no mind. There are two types of people. If I say, make effort, they make effort, but they don't allow effortlessness then. The other type is there, if I say it will happen only in effortlessness, then leave all effort. Both have gone wrong. Both have gone off the way. This is the rhythm of life. Make effort so you can be effortless also. Strain to the very end, so that you can achieve moments of non-strained consciousness. Run as fast as you can, so that when you sit, you really sit. Be exhausted in effort, so when you rest, it is a real rest. You can rest with restlessness inside you. You can lie down on the ground, but the restlessness goes on inside. So you are simply lying down, but it is not a rest. You may sit like a Buddha, and inside the child is running, the mind working and functioning. Inside you are going mad, outside you are sitting in a Buddha posture. You can be totally static outside, not moving, no activity, and inside goes on the turmoil. This won't help. Finish the turmoil in your first. Run as fast as you can. Be exhausted. Hence my emphasis on dynamic meditation. It is both effort and effortlessness. It is both activity and inactivity. It is both running and then zazen, then just sitting. Nanin is looking in the disciple. Has he transcended effort? Has he come to effortlessness? Has consciousness become a natural, a spontaneous thing to him? Is he unconfused? Is he clear like a clear blue sky? Then he can be a master. He can be allowed to go and teach others. Remember this whenever the temptation comes to you to teach someone. And if you want to say something to somebody, just say that it is about God, about awareness. And make the other aware that you have not achieved. You have heard. And you have heard such beautiful things you would like to say, but you have not achieved. Then you can be a help without any poisoning, without poisoning the other. Always remember, if you don't know, you don't know. Never pretend. Not even negatively, because you can simply remain silent, not saying anything that you have not attained. Even that is not good. Because in silence, the other may carry the feeling that you have known. Make it clear that you have not known it, but you have known persons who know. You have heard about it. In India, there exist two types of scriptures. One is called Sruti, another is called Smriti. Smriti means memory, and Sruti means that which has been heard. The literature that is called Smriti belongs to those who have known themselves. It is their own. They have related their own memory. They have related their own experiences. Sruti is the second type of literature. It is from those who have been fortunate to be near those who have known. They have heard. Remember this always. If you have heard, then tell that it is something you have heard. And it is so beautiful that even in hearing, it has become a treasure with you. Even in hearing, it has touched your heart. And you would like to share. But this is just friendly. You are not becoming a master. It is just a loving gesture, just sharing your happiness. But you are not sharing awareness. Unless you attend, unless you realize, unless it becomes your own, don't try to guide anyone. That is violent. And when you have attained, your very being will become a guidance. This disciple who came to the master Narayan was from the very beginning taking a wrong step. Because if he was ready, Narayan would have called him. It was not on his part to decide that 10 years are now complete and I should go and teach. This very thing was wrong. When he was ready, the master will know before he comes to know it. Because of course the master can be more observing than you ever can be of your own self. And the master follows you even in your nights and in your dreams. He is like a shadow, constantly watching what is happening, whether you may be aware of its watching or not. And you will not be aware because it is such a subtle thing. Whenever a disciple is ready, the master will call him and tell him, now you go. The disciple need not announce. And if the disciple decides to announce, that means he is not ready. The ego is there. This disciple wanted to be a master. Every disciple wants. And the very wanting becomes the barrier. 10 years were complete. He must have been calculating. He must have been a very cunning fellow. Otherwise, who will remember? And what is the use living with a master if you cannot forget time? What else you are going to forget? What is the hurry? This disciple was not surrendered. He was just waiting, calculating. Arithmetic is there, logic is there, and a fixed attitude towards things. He knows the history of the monastery, that in 10 years' time a disciple is ready and then he goes. But it depends. Every disciple will not be ready in 10 years. Some disciples will not be ready in 10 lives. And some disciples will be ready in 10 seconds. It is not a mechanical thing. It depends on the quality, the intensity of the consciousness of the disciple. Sometimes it has happened just to look from the master and the disciple is ready. If he was open, if there was no barrier, if he was surrendered, then a single moment is enough. Even that is not needed. The thing happens timelessly. But if you are calculating, thinking when it is going to happen, I have waited enough. 1 year is lost, 2 years are lost, 10 years are gone, and I am waiting and nothing is happening, and you are calculating inside, you are wasting time. A disciple must drop time consciousness. Time belongs to the ego. Time belongs to the mind. Meditation is timeless. this disciple comes to the master just to announce that 10 years are complete now. Where I am supposed to go and where I am supposed to teach now. I am ready. Because 10 years have passed, nobody ever gets ready that way. That's why the master had to ask a question. Just to make that disciple appear foolish to himself. And Zen masters are difficult people. Very straight, penetrating, embarrassing. What a question to ask to a great seeker who has been waiting for 10 years. Where you have left your shoes? On the right or on the left? What type of a question and what type of a man is this who asks such a question to a great seeker? This is not metaphysical at all. You cannot find more tribal a question. More profane a question you cannot find. Asking about the shoes, he should have asked about God and the disciple was ready. He should have asked about heaven and hell and the disciple was ready. The disciple must have craned everything, every answer. That's why he has wasted 10 years reading, studying. All the scriptures were with him and he was ready. Any question the master can ask. And remember, if you are near an enlightened man, he is never going to ask a question which you can answer. It is not a question of answering. It is a question of responding with the whole being. He asked such a futile question, where you have left your shoes? The whole metaphysics of the disciple must have gone shattered. He must have thought, what type of man? And I am ready here, bubbling with answers. Any type of question you raise, and I will answer. Even questions which Buddha has not answered, I will answer. I know all the books, all the scriptures, I have read everything. All the sutras are studied and memorized. He was ready. And this man asks about the sutras. But this man really asks a question which cannot be answered because you cannot be ready for it beforehand. It was absolutely unpredictable. And this disciple feels hesitation. And the hesitation is the response. Hesitation says everything about the disciple. He is still not aware. Otherwise, there can be no hesitation. You act. He should have done something if he was alert. He should have responded in a total way. But he became a mind, puzzled, hesitation, confusion. The story is beautiful. When for the first time Zen became known in the West, they couldn't believe that what these masters are doing and asking, questioning absurd things. You ask a master a question and he responds. No Zen master will give you the answer he will respond. One seeker, a philosophical seeker of course, came to a Zen master, Bokojo, and he asked Bokojo, what is the way? And Bokojo looked at the nearby hills and he said, the hills are very beautiful. Seems upset because he is asking, what is the way? And he says, the hills are beautiful. Frustrated, the seeker left immediately. Then Bokojo had a beautiful laugh. One disciple asked Master, that man must have thought you are mad. Said Bokojo, one of us is certainly mad. Either he is mad, because you cannot ask about the way. You have to travel it. Through traveling, the way is discovered. It is not there ready-made, so I cannot say where it is. It is not just like a super highway, ready-made, waiting for you, come and travel. There is no way like that. Otherwise, all would have reached long before. If the way was ready-made, everyone would have traveled. The way is created through your traveling. It is not there waiting for you. The moment you start traveling, it is created. It comes out of you, just like a spider's web. It comes through you. You create it, then you travel it. And you travel it and you create it more. And remember, the way disappears with you. So nobody else can travel on it. It cannot be borrowed. So the master says, it cannot be asked. Only foolish people ask such questions. What is the way? You are the way. Then the disciple asks, I understand that, but why you talked about the hills? The master says, the master has to talk about the hills, because unless you cross the hills, there is no way to be found. Beyond the hills is the way. And hills are so beautiful, nobody wants to cross them. They are so enchanting. So hypnotizing that everybody is lost in the hills and the way exists beyond. A master responds. He hits your real necessity. He is not worried about your question. Your question may be relevant, irrelevant. You are always relevant. He looks in you. He hits you. But intellectual people will always miss such type of answers. Enough, Tipa?